On this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show, we discuss our random favorites from our top 100 games of the year list. Be sure to stick with us.
I know a magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish. For the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds. And the seas with ridiculous fish. The Touch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday. Arcade Show.
Hey guys, what's up? You're listening to the Touch Arcade Show's episode number 335, a recording on December 26, 2017. We pushed off our Friday episode for a Tuesday episode because we were working so late in the day on Friday that we would have published it at, like, I don't even know, 10 p.m. or whatever, which was a little too much for me. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, thanks a ton for downloading. Typically, we post these on Friday. I'm Eli, and with me is Jared. In between the two of us, we have about 20 years of experience covering mobile games. We write for a website called toucharcade.com, which is really the best place to go to get all your mobile game news, reviews, and all of that other kind of stuff. The site, as well as this podcast, is totally powered by Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/toucharcade. If you're not into the Patreon thing, we'd really appreciate it if you do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. It helps us a ton to keep on keeping on. We stream on Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade. We've got a Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade. So check those out if you're into the Twitch or the Discord thing. We're kind of getting right into it this week with our top 100 games of the year, which, man, this article is like 12,000 words. It is just kind of the culmination of all the good games of the year. It's kind of trying to think how we were going to go about kind of taking this into a podcast format. So I think what we're going to do is just kind of like go through the list and just talk about like the standout ones that we really want to talk about. Otherwise it's like, all right, we talk about every single game for 40 seconds quick hits mode.
Well, I also think one of the problems we came across with this list, because we did a top 100 last year, which sort of felt necessary because our top 10 or whatever we were doing before, 25, just wasn't enough for everything that came out last year. And then, so I wanted to kind of follow suit and do another top 100 because I thought last year's was so great. But then we ran into this problem where it was like, so we were trying to get the number down to 100. We had picked out over 400 something games in total to kind of like sift through.
I think that was that list could have been really, the original list could have been way bigger. Like, we basically go off like games that were game of the week, like anything that had been the hot games ever, like anything that we had reviewed and scored like what, above like a 3 or 4 or something was in you know, in consideration for that. Plus just like random stuff that it's like the interesting thing about covering mobile games is that, and I feel like a lot of people like that write for, you know, quote unquote, like real games websites, like don't appreciate, is that like the amount of content that we deal with in an average year is just bananas. I mean, like when we were going through this list, like, so originally we put, like, Jared put together the list of like 500 or so games and we all kind of went through, and I really don't, I think that that list is like everything that is even worth talking about in the year, more or less.
Like, it's pretty much what it was.
Like very, very little stuff missing of that, that, was in the original big list. And then we kind of went through and like tagged off the ones that we really liked. And kind of, you know, it was a lot of agreement on, you know, what games were there. We kind of always end up in a situation where like everyone agrees on like 75. And then there's like,
there's
25
a little bit of back and forth
that it's like, I don't know about this one. Like, oh, we should definitely add this one cause I really liked it. Like Tempest Pirate, RPG, I think it is, was one of those games where it was like, dude, we got to get this one in here from, Andy Fretz. So I was like, all right, yeah, that's fine. We can certainly find something to cut to get that in there. So,
well, that was sort of what the problem was there's so many games that are on that cusp of like, yeah, they're super good and I recommend anyone try them out. And with mobile games, they're usually very cheap and easy to get. So it's like, even if a game's not like, you know, blow your brain out amazing or anything like that, it's still very good and worth checking out. And I feel like people should know that they exist or whatever. But when you start including games that are on that level of quality, it's kind of like where the list will never end. And so I feel like our 100 is probably half games that kind of fit into that bill, and then there's probably another 50 or 100 on the bigger list that we made that could easily fit interchangeably with the ones that we actually did include. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like sort of tough for us. I don't know if I want to do 100 next year again. I almost want to go through and get everything that's like absolutely must have, like level 11, great.
Yeah.
And do a list of that. And then maybe do some sort of smaller feature that rounds up the many hundreds of other pretty great games also that you can also get. I don't know. It's just a weird problem that I didn't really expect.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting. I don't know what the great solution for that is. Like, I kind of like the idea next year of, because like we work so hard to like put this article out, we just kind of like dump it out on like the Friday before Christmas or whatever. Yeah. And it seems like there isn't as much like hype or anticipation as there should be around something like that. Like, oh shit, Touch Arcade's putting together like their best games. Like, I can't wait to see it, kind of thing. Yeah. It's just like, oh, Touch Arcade posted that, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think it would be cool to kind of turn it into more of like an event kind of thing, maybe. But like, so here's like, ideally I could see it working like the kind of the way that they did like the Game Awards stuff, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh, here's everything that's in consideration for all this mm-hmm. stuff. And then you post those huge lists and then it's like, oh, well, what's going to win? Like, oh, you're posting it on the 22nd or whatever. Like, I can't wait to see what's going to be posted. Yeah. The problem with that is like in mobile, is that, man, like everything moves so fast. So like if we were doing like the traditional kind of like hype up a game of the year event sort of thing, we would need to start planning in like November, right?
Well, also then what would happen to something like Civilization VI?
Right. That's
just came out. And so it would be, we'd have to try and throw that into the mix somehow when we didn't even know about it.
That's exactly the point I'm trying to get to, is that like, I don't know how you handle that sort of thing when it's like, like if we would have committed to posting all our best of stuff on, you know, the Friday like we did, or maybe even teased it out over the course of that week, like what do you do for surprises? Or you know, like it almost kind of, I think it always seems kind of weird too to have games that came out like 2 days before you're posting your best of list, it's suddenly in the best of list, like Goa or however you say it, and stuff. Like games that came out like not last week or the week before, like all those games are in this, and it's kind of weird to be like, oh hey, these are the best games of the year, by the way, this game's 6 days old.
I mean, when a game's good, it's good, but
well, it's just weird because the way like the console space works, and you know, PC space in the same kind of way, is that like the games that were in consideration for like the Game Awards have like Zelda Breath of the Wild, right? That came out in March, right? Early March, late February, something like that, when the Switch was new. Yeah. So like that's a game that everyone has managed to play through and kind of, you know, like ruminate on and, you know, write a think piece and everything else. So like when that game is in the discussion of game of the year, it's like, oh yeah, I spent, you know, 200 hours playing this game, and like, you know, I've read all these discussions online, it's really cool, and we've seen like their DLC cycle and all this other stuff, which that feels really good and appropriate to talk about in a game of the year setting. But like, doesn't it seem weird to have a game like Civ 6 basically like slide in under the finish line at, you know, like the very last second? I mean, if we were doing, we haven't really talked about, I guess we're just doing game of the year stuff because that's what we've done in the past instead of breaking it out into iPad or whatever, right? But I mean, like, I think you could put like a super strong argument together that like the Civ 6 port should be iPad game of the year, at least in the conversation somewhere, right? And that's a game that has been out for 4 days as of this recording, or 5 days.
Well, it's kind
of
weird too, like especially this year, there's been so many ports and stuff like that, but like if a game is like award-winning on PC and then it comes to mobile, you know, as long as nothing went terribly wrong, it's going to be a same sort of quality, you know what I mean? And Civ 6 is pretty much that. It's award-winning on desktop, and then the iPad version is for the most part, you know, feature parity between the two. So it's like, it's one of the best strategy games already, even if the moment it came out it was, you know, so it is a weird thing to do.
I just don't know how you reconcile that, because like I feel like it really makes kind of like mobile award stuff not feel like quite as important in a way, because it's like, oh hey, this game came out 2 days ago, it's the best game of the year, I think. It's like, how can you even say that when you know, when you compare it to the Switch side, you know, it's like, I feel like anyone could make a very strong argument that, that Zelda should have been Game of the Year based on hundreds of hours of play, you know, and like,
yeah,
and all that stuff. So,
yeah, I it would be weird that if Zelda came out, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, that's enough time to for people to have beaten it and to have reviewed it, and it probably reviews super well. But would you be like, holy crap, this is Game of the Year? Do you really know just the extent that that game goes to be amazing or whatever?
Right.
I don't know.
But I think like the bigger problem with that is like, even if you, you know, as like someone that would cover Switch games, like say Zelda came out in place of Civ 6, right? Which that came out on what, Thursday last week, right? I think, yeah. So, you know, say you absolutely powered through that. Like, you came out in the morning of Thursday and you did nothing but dump like 45 hours into that game over the course of the last few days, right? And like you could make the argument like, yes, this is one of the best games that came out this year. Like, it just seems hard to like sell that to people.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh, I haven't even, like, you're saying this is the best game that came out this year. Like, I haven't even tried it, or maybe I didn't even know that it came out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, makes mobile stuff really kind of awkward to put together. I mean, maybe that's like so the International Mobile Gaming Awards stuff, which I've kind of been a part of for, I don't know, quite a while now. I always kind of thought it was a little anticlimactic that they come in like and announce their winners at GDC. But then like, maybe that's like how you do it to, you know, like give the year like breathing room, I guess, on stuff.
You know, I guess something else we could do is be like, okay, cutoff is November 1st for our games. You know, our fiscal year runs from November 1st to November 1st or something like that. And so that way, you would just know going in that any of the big games that came out in November or December would have to go into the next year's batch or whatever. And I think that would give us more time to kind of digest things and not have to worry about those latecomers.
Yeah.
But then again, that's sort of a shame to have something like Civ 6 come out, even though it was a week ago, not be in a list of the best games for your iOS device, because it is one of them. So
yeah, and I definitely, like, I can't think of any off the top of my head titles that have fallen into this weird gray area, but I know this has been the case where we've posted ours like the week before the freeze, and then like a bunch of games came out and we're like, oh shit, well, what do we do with these? And we were like, all right, well, they're in consideration for next year. And then it's like, you always have to have like that weird caveat of like, well, yeah, this was released like 2 weeks before the end of 2016, but it's in ours this year because we had already posted our best of thing. Like, I don't know. There's just no great way to do it. It's the problem. So I don't know.
We do the best we can.
Do the best we can. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully everyone enjoyed the list. I kind of sorted it. Originally, it was just in alphabetic order. I went through and sorted it by genre because I had more than a few people like send me DMs on Twitter and be like, dude, your thing is just overwhelming. Like, there's so much, like, I don't even know what to look for. Like, if I like puzzle games, like, you don't really even mention, like, some games are puzzle games. I was like, all right, yeah, I'll go through and
kind of. That's kind of another problem, though, with having a list of 100. I feel like 100, for the most part, is manageable. I mean, considering just how many games there are released, but it's a lot to scroll through, and it can get pretty mind-numbing trying to look through them and digest them and make sense of them and decide what you want.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, especially because, like, a lot of these cost money, too. So it's like, all right, I want to get, like, you know, whatever the best five games on this list are. And it's like, well, it's a big ask for someone to, like, go through an alphabetical list, like, and then, like, read reviews of anything that they find to be interesting or whatever. But I don't know a better way to do it than
how we're doing it. I don't really either.
Like, that's kind of the problem, so.
I sort of think, I think next year what I'd like to do is we can start with our giant list like we always do, and then just pick things that are absolutely the top cream of the crop sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then sort of see what number that leaves us at. And, you know, if it's 30, it's 30. And if it's 50, it's 50. And if it's 70, it's 70. Like, whatever. Just kind of go with that. And then maybe do something separate for all those, like, you know, well above average, but maybe not mind-blowing games. I don't know.
Yeah. I like that. The problem is that and I was kind of thinking about this year too, is that you run into a situation where you post so many, like, oh, these are the best games thing, that they start to lose their luster in a way.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, oh, this is best games article number 9. Okay. So I don't know. And like the other problem is, like, people over the year just seem to be more and more settled into like the 3 or 4 big free to play games that they play. So it's like, they're, even though, because like in previous years we post these big lists and people would just like go crazy being like, oh, I totally missed this one. Like, let me download this, like, and all this stuff. And now it's like, I don't know. I got Hearthstone and Clash of Clans. Like, I don't need anything else. Like, those games deliver everything I need and keep all of my time occupied. So
yeah,
it's a weird world out there. But anyway, let's go through some of our favorites, I guess. And so just starting with action, and I really doubt we're going to make it all the way through this. So please, if you haven't, look at the top 100 games list, like, you know, just type Touch Arcade top 100 games in Google. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be the first thing that comes up. Again, in alphabetic order per genre, like, I really am digging Arena of Valor.
Mm-hmm.
It is unbelievably good to an extent that is really just unbelievable. So the whole idea behind this game is that it is published by Tencent, which is the same company that owns Riot, who makes League of Legends. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of an interesting sort of thing, because if you own, like, because it's a total League of Legends ripoff, right? Like, it's not a port. It occupies this really weird space, because it's like the characters are all very similar, but they're named like different things. It's like the RC Cola of,
so they, like, clone their own game.
Yes and no, like, because so the interface and the map and everything is like one-to-one identical almost. So if you're like ripping off your own thing, is it still a ripoff? Like, is that, I don't know how that all shakes out.
That's the ultimate question.
But it's just outstanding. And I was huge into League of Legends, and you know, because of that, I've been very interested in these various mobile MOBAs, but none of them have really, like, clicked with me at all. And you know, Vainglory is I guess, you know, what, probably one of the bigger ones. And that game uses a tap to move mechanic that, like, so you use your finger and tap as if you're clicking with the mouse. And, like, when you're playing a MOBA, you're clicking constantly. Like, you know, you make your dude move in a circle, like, cause you don't want to be standing still, because otherwise that's how, you know, make it very easy for people to, like, shoot at you and stuff like that with their magic spells and other junk. So you always want to be moving, which when you play Vainglory, like, the amount of tapping you do is, I feel like, kind of oppressive. Like, I don't know, it seems like stressful to me, because like you're just like constantly like tapping to move your dude around, and it's just too much for how I play games, right? So the way that this game works is kind of like okay, what was the Space Time Studios game? Mobile Champions, Champions of something or other. I haven't.
Champions of Mobile? I don't know.
I have it in the review somewhere. Let me pull that up. It's Call of Champions, sorry. So the way that game worked is that you know, you had a virtual joystick and then buttons for your different ability, and that's exactly how Arena of Valor is played, which works outstanding on the phone. It kind of got into this a little bit in the review of the game, but it's like these mobile MOBAs take just as much time, well, not quite as much time, but just as much attention as playing like a proper PC game. So for me, I really never played too much of Vainglory, because it was like, it was just objectively better on the iPad compared to the iPhone. And I really, you know, I don't bring my iPad out of the house very much unless I'm traveling. So if I'm going to play a game like that and I'm going to be at home and it's going to take just as much time and attention, like, there was never a situation where I was like, oh, I'd rather play Vainglory over League of Legends.
Right.
You know? Like, imagine if, like, you know, Injustice 2 or whatever, like, took just as much time and attention and everything else as, like, playing proper Injustice on your Xbox.
Right. Like, and if, why would you bother?
Why would you bother? Yeah. So what I like about Arena of Valor is it plays very, very well on your cell phone, and it works very well over LTE. So, like, I was, you know, just playing in the passenger seat of the car, and it worked totally fine. And if you play the 3v3 mode, like, the game's lasting between like 5 to 10 minutes, which is a little long on the mobile kind of session length, but still totally workable. Which, I don't know, it was just outstanding. Absolutely outstanding game. I nothing but good things to say about it. It's like the biggest game in the world in China, and it's going to be curious to see how it does in North America. They're right now, it's, you know, like, quote unquote, soft launched.
Yeah,
which I don't really know what that means, because it's like getting featured and people are downloading it and
I think they're just meaning that as limited launch because it's not actually worldwide yet. But it's weird because it's been out in Europe since like July. It's been out in China for a couple of years, so
out in China, most if not all European countries in North America now. So like, if this is a soft launch, like what territories are they targeting for the launch? Like, Antarctica.
I mean, that's nice though if they're taking their time like that. But
I guess So we got a Tetracade Guild in the game that's actually full right now. That is kind of ripping it up, so that's pretty cool. But anyway, Arena of Valor is totally free to download. Like, if nothing else, like, it's got a really, really, really good onboarding process. If you never played a MOBA like this before, it's very good at not throwing too much at you at any given time. Like, the cadence of the tutorial is basically like it shows you like the core mechanics of how the game is played, and it's like, all right, well, here, play a game, and like in that game, like, you'll get enough experience to level up, and then it'll be like, all right, cool, at level two, like, you have access to this thing. So like, let's check out this thing and show you how it works. And it's like, all right, play, you know, two more games. And then when you play those two more games, you'll level up to like level three. And it just kind of goes that way. We're just slowly introducing you to like more and more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because like a lot of these games have a very high level of assumed knowledge where it's like, all right, cool, here you go, play. And it's like, I've never played a MOBA before and I don't understand what to do. And like, it's just on you to figure it out, I guess.
Yeah.
So what do you want to talk about? On, do you have this list pulled up on your end?
I don't, but I can. I don't know. We're not going to be able to make it through the whole list. So.
No, I know. I'm just like, just pick some out from all this to just talk about real quick. Sonic Runner's Adventures is on there. It's kind of an interesting game because it just came out, week before?
Yeah,
something like that. And it's basically, so Sonic Runners was a Sega free-to-play level-based Sonic game, which seemed like a really cool thing when it was launched, right? Because it was made by like the real deal, like Team Sonic or something like that. It just kind of bombed because I feel like it was super late to the party with this style of game, right?
Yeah.
Imagine Sonic Runners being released like, you know, a month after Cannibal or whatever. And what was that? Probably like out of like 2010.
Yeah, it would have blew minds.
It would have blown everyone's mind. But, you know, when you release a free to play side scrolling runner onto the App Store, and I don't remember when this one first came out, but it was recently, like inside the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, they shut it down super quick. I don't even think it lasted a year.
I think it just totally, totally bombed, which, you know, is not unexpected because, you know, especially this came out after, Fun Run, I think, was one of them. And there's a ton of those, like, multiplayer side-scroller runner things, remember?
Mm-hmm.
For a while, like, that was, like, the hot thing. And I feel like a lot of people downloaded a bunch of those. Like, a lot of, like the casual gamer player base, right? Probably burnt out on that kind of thing. And then Sonic Runners came out and it was like, oh, cool, this is the game I've been playing, but it has Sonic in it. And I just don't really care. So Gameloft took that and kind of rejiggered it a little bit and released it as a premium $3 game, which it probably should have been all along. Because it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool Sonic game. But I feel like the people that would have downloaded it because it's a pretty cool Sonic game were just like, oh, I'm not getting involved in a free-to-play thing.
Yeah.
But would have given $3 for it.
Well, it's interesting because this game is paid, but there's still kind of like a grind to get the characters and stuff like that. So I'm like waiting for someone to be like, ugh, I wish I could just buy a character.
Yeah.
I have to play so much to unlock them and upgrade them.
Well, I think what's interesting, it seems like it's rebalanced a little bit and that the grind is way less than it used to be when it was a free-to-play thing, but it's still like, you can, if you pay $3 for it, just be aware that there's still kind of awkward free to play trimmings here and there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's terrible, but,
I like the game for what it is, but, I don't know. I don't love it. I think it's like a really neat, the fact that it's a Sonic game is sort of just secondary. Like, I think it's a really good reaction game. And it reminded me a lot of like Rayman Jungle Run, where it was like, when and where you tap is like the key to the entire game, and there's sort of like a nice rhythm, almost like a puzzle to figure out each level, like to jump properly, to collect every item, kill every enemy, like, you know, that sort of thing. But it's very just one dimensional like that. Like, it, other than you tapping when you need to, the rest of the game just kind of plays itself. So it's sort of like, I don't know, worth checking out for sure, especially if you like side scrolling runners and don't want like a free to play one. Then this is kind of your only option unless you buy Cannibal again.
Yeah. So I wanted to put a Telltale game on the list somewhere, and there's kind of a kerfuffle as to why Batman: The Enemy Within was on it instead of the Guardians of the Galaxy game. And like, for me personally, like, that came down to, I thought it was really clever in these games how you actually like play as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. That's kind of the hook of this
series. So yeah, like, if you haven't played the Batman Telltale games, they're really good. And it's really cool how, because it seems like most Batman games, all Batman games maybe even, you know, Bruce Wayne, basically, if he exists at all in the game, it's like in the opening cutscene, right? Where it's like, you know, he might be in Wayne Manor and it's like, oh, you know, the Joker's on loose or whatever. I better put my stuff on and spend the next 12 hours of this single player game as Batman, right?
Yeah.
So I can't really think of a game where you've ever done much as Bruce Wayne. Can you?
We also have to pretend to be the billionaire.
Yeah.
And do everything that goes with that.
So I thought that this was a pretty fascinating exploration of that, because that's always kind of like my favorite part of like the Batman movies, like the which one is it of the Dark Knight trilogy where like Ra's al Ghul comes to the party at Wayne Manor. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? And that might be the first one or maybe the third one, I don't remember. But like, you know, Bruce Wayne needs to deal with him as Bruce Wayne, which I thought was like one of the better scenes in a Batman movie, because it was like, you know, he can't let everyone know that he's Batman, but like, you know, the bad guy clearly knows and is like invading his house and stuff like that. And I don't really think that the Telltale Batman games really have a moment that's quite as powerful as that one, but it's still pretty neat how, you go through and your decisions as Bruce Wayne are important, and you have to deal with like the decisions you made as Batman as Bruce Wayne and kind of vice versa, which is, I don't know. I think it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that whatever's going on with Telltale, with them doing layoffs and stuff, like, turns out to be a good thing in some weird way, which I don't know how that can kind of pan out, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Batman: The Enemy Within is another outstanding game on this list. God, I don't know what else should we talk about. There's so many good ones on here.
Yeah, it's hard.
So this was kind of interesting on this list is that we wanted to include one of the NetEase PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds knockoffs, but like just couldn't really decide which one to put in there because they're all so similar. So we ended up putting in Rules of Survival for,
we think this is the most popular one, but I don't know.
Yeah. The other ones, what are they, even the
Knives Out and Knives Survivor Out. Royale.
I thought there was a fourth one,
which are essentially the same game as far as I know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So Knives Out, Survivor Royale, Rules of Survival. I thought there was a fourth one, but maybe I'm imagining things.
I think, not from NetEase, I don't think.
But, these games are shockingly good as far as like mobile ports are concerned. Like, you would think that you know, a very 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 hardcore PC game wouldn't necessarily translate too well, but it, like, they make just enough mobile concessions to make it work with the virtual controls, which I think is pretty fascinating, that this is kind of thing. I just really wish that NetEase would get together with all these teams and be like, all right, like, you guys clearly made three good PUBG knockoffs.
Yeah.
So let's all get together, and because especially now that these games have been out like, I don't know, like a month, right? And they come out in like November or something like that. I don't really remember when they were first. Can we look at the version history? I guess it doesn't really show the date.
I don't think that'll tell you because I think they were all soft launched. But
oh yeah, that's a good point. I just wish they'd be like, all right, let's combine the best things from all these games, because that's what's kind of interesting about following them, is that like people like the control scheme in one game better than the other, but this you know, the other game like has more people in it, or the island is a little bit better designed, or whatever else. And I think that it's Rules of Survival that has the Santa game mode right now, but it might be
I think that's Knives Out, but or is it either of them.
This is what's so confusing about this stupid thing. So like one of the NetEase PUBG clones right now, and I'm not sure which one, but it one of them. They've had like a really cool event going right now for Christmas, where so 120 people join the match, or I guess like I think Knives Out might be 100, whereas Rules of Survival is 120. Either way, a bunch of people join the map, and one person starts as Santa. So you have like a Santa suit on and all this stuff. And then when someone, and you stick out like a sore thumb because you're in bright red, right? So when you get killed, someone can then loot your Santa suit. And if it doesn't get looted, it shows up on the map and shows everyone where the Santa suit is. So it's kind of crazy because playing the game is like half, because you can use the location of the Santa suit is like, oh, well, I know some like idiot's going to go for this. Because when you win, if you win as Santa, you get, I don't remember what the bonus is, but it's like some meaningful bonus that makes it worthwhile to go after. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, all right, well, do I want to go and run and try to get the Santa suit and run off and see if I can win the game as Santa? Or do I want to like sit up on this hill and, you know, save with my sniper rifle and pick off idiots that are going to try and get the Santa suit?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Which is really just kind of a really fascinating dynamic that I wouldn't think that an event like this would work so well in one of these games. But like all I've seen is people talking about how like cool it is on Twitter and how much they wish that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds had a similar thing, which is kind of weird. Cause like, if you would have told me that, like, all right, so NetEase is going to not only release a PUBG clone, but they're going to release three of them. I'd be like, all right, well, that's weird. And I don't know why they would do that, but if you say so. And then if you would have gone one level deeper and been like, and it's going to have a holiday event, that's so cool that people are going to be like, God, I wish this event from this weird Chinese mobile knockoff of this game I like actually was in the game that I like instead.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just truly bizarre that this is a reality I think that we live in.
It's sort of cool in a way, though. Like, that's the competition that sort of breeds innovation. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, hey, a game that aped your original idea is actually doing things that are cooler than you're actually doing now.
Yeah.
So you better catch up to them and start doing those things and then coming up with more new things to keep your players happy or whatever. That's a good thing.
Well, there was this huge kerfuffle when, so I don't know if people listening follow the PC world that much, but so, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was in early access and was, you know, quickly becoming like the biggest game ever. And then, Fortnite, which is a Unreal kind of, it's made by actual like Epic. It's an Epic game. I've never played the original version of Fortnite, but they released a free-to-play Battle Royale mode, which I feel like got off the ground because PlayerUnknown decided just like totally put them on blast as these copycats and stuff like that. And like, I never would have, like, I don't really play Unreal Tournament or, you know, any of those other kind of games. So like the existence of this game would not have been on my radar at all.
Right.
If I hadn't seen like PlayerUnknown like just going absolutely mental on these guys.
No, I agree. They gave them the publicity.
So yeah. So basically, having PlayerUnknown got on Twitter and was like, "Oh, I can't believe this shitty clone, Epic stealing my game. I can't believe this." So everyone was like, "What's this Fortnite thing that you're so mad about? Like, let me download this. Oh, it's free. Yeah. Cool." So what they did in Fortnite was it's kind of like a battle royale sort of thing, like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, but has like a building mechanic. Uh-huh. So you can like gather materials and actually like build little bases and stuff to defend, which that's is another crazy, like really cool thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's initially when PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds got so big and everyone was like, oh, well, we're adding a battle royale mode to our game. I was like, oh, this is going to turn into like the new Call of Duty. Okay. Cause like, remember when Call of Duty, I don't remember which one it was, but maybe Modern Warfare, the first one, like really hit it big on Xbox Live with multiplayer with their team-based deathmatch stuff.
Yeah.
It might
or even, like zombie mode or something like,
yeah.
I feel like everyone copied zombie mode. After
yeah. It seemed like, you know, when something like that happens and it hits big, like everyone implements the exact same thing. And it just kind of is like, all right, like I really don't care to play another team-based shooter with all sorts of weird unlock mechanics and stuff. Because that definitely like turned me off of buying a few different console games, because especially as you read articles where it was like there's more people working on the multiplayer of the game than the single player of the game.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just as many or something like that. Because I remember it really turned me off one of the Uncharted games when I read about like just how much effort was going into the multiplayer, because like that's not a game series that I play at all because I care about multiplayer. Like I want a really cool, well done, tightly packed single player adventure.
Yeah.
Like I have zero interest in getting involved in the multiplayer. So the fact that like you guys are even like investing resources into this instead of the single player stuff, like it's irritating to
me. It's like a turn off. Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess if everyone kind of takes their own spin on the battle royale formula, like that's cool.
Yeah. Well, I think at the very least it's surprising how well a game like that translates to mobile.
Oh yeah.
And it's proven super popular. The fact that, you know, whichever one is actually leading in the charts, they've all been up in the charts pretty high. So
yeah,
there's a ton of people playing this type of game on a touchscreen, which is pretty impressive to me.
Well, it's neat because I know people in real life that fall into this situation where it's like all you hear about is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And it's like, at which point, if you want to play it, you need a reasonably high-end gaming PC or an Xbox One.
Yeah.
It really doesn't run that well on the Xbox One. Like if you watch YouTube videos of it, it's like kind of shocking how they even released it in the current state that it's in. But everyone has a phone and you can just download this free phone game and, you know, like get a pretty good idea of what it's like.
Yeah.
Which I think is, I mean, you can make arguments about how it's a shitty Chinese knockoff and stuff all you want, but
yeah,
it's still pretty cool that people are experiencing this kind of game.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't know.
I think so.
So another game on our list real quick is, the Stranger Things game, which, this totally came out of the blue. When it was first announced, I don't remember which PR outfit was, repping it, but it was something that we deal with all the time is, what sometimes feels like a greenhorn, PR interns kind of approaching us more or less. And who seem like they don't understand anything about how the mobile market works and like wants you to sign like non-disclosure agreements and like, you know, just getting very, very, very extreme on all these things that they want you to do to then tell you about the thing that they're doing. Because like 95% of the time someone does that and it's like, all right, well, we need you to fax us this NDA and like all this other stuff. And it's like, all right, cool. I jumped through every hoop that requested of me, like, what's the game? And they're like, it's this match three where you match cookies instead of gems. And it's like,
that's totally true.
Cool. I'm glad that we have this like 30 email chain back and forth of all these things I must agree to for you to tell me about what's going to be the hottest game ever known to mankind. And it turns out to be this. So the Stranger Things game was kind of amusing because like I was in super eye roll mode, like going through them originally, because like they emailed us and were like, we have a very popular IP coming to mobile. Like we need you to, you know, agree to the super secret embargo. Like we really can't have it leak or anything else like this. And I was like, all right, dude, like, sure. It's a Tuesday. I don't have anything going on. So I'll play your games.
Yeah.
What kind of crazy crap do you want me to do? And I just remember like rolling my eyes so hard. And then they're like, all right, so here's the deal. It's Stranger Things, the game. It's free. Check it out. And I don't remember if they sent me a promo code or a test flight or something, but I was like, holy shit, this is outstanding.
It's what you always dream those emails will turn into.
Yeah. And that was kind of the funny thing. Like, I even think
instead
I told
of like
that.
Garfield's fart, you know, adventure.
Yeah. I think I even mentioned that to them. I was like, dude, I can't even tell you how many times I go through this. And it's like almost a joke, like what the game turns out to be with all the rigmarole to like find out about it. But like, this is actually like genuinely really cool. So it's totally like a free, I feel like it's fair to call it like an adver game almost.
Yeah, it's definitely like, hey, Stranger Things is a thing on Netflix, go watch it, whatever. But it's not very pushy about it at all. There's nothing you can spend money on. There's not like ads flying up in your face after every level or anything like that. Like it truly is a fully free game.
Yeah.
As long as you don't care that it's branded with Stranger Things, but I feel like that should be the reason you're playing it.
Well, but I thought it was cool too, because like, I think that if you hadn't watched Stranger Things, like, so when I was playing through it, I was like really trying to be like cognizant of like what this game would be like if I really didn't know what Stranger Things was. Because like when you looked at it on iTunes, it's like, oh, neat. Like a kind of 16-bit ish kind of action RPG looking sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like that looks like something I like. So yeah. I really think that it's plausible that, although I don't know, Stranger Things was like such a big deal. Like maybe you download, like maybe you've heard of Stranger Things and you're like, I don't know, I'm not into binge watching TV shows. Yeah. Like, but the game looks cool. Let me try the game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you play through the game and you're like, wow, this is really neat. I want to know more about what's going on in this. Cause the game
I'm
is
sure
pretty
that's
mysterious.
The ideal scenario they're hoping for.
Yeah. I'd really be kind of curious if that worked or yeah. how that all kind of played out.
Well, it is. So. What I think is cool about this game is that if you weren't a fan, it's a nice standalone experience. You don't need any knowledge of the shows really for anything to make sense or whatever. But it's also like a super rad piece of fan service for if you really do like the show. It kind of fleshes out different areas of, you know, the whole universe that the show takes place in and some of the characters and stuff like that. And it does all that without actually like spoiling anything from the show.
Yeah.
So I think that was really cool too. It's its own thing that exists separately from the seasons of the show. So you could either have knowledge or not have knowledge and still like have a good time.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of a way more successful execution of, God, what was the name of that Matrix video game that came out in between the Matrix 1 and Matrix 2? You remember that? Like the whole idea of that game was like, yeah. and it's kind of very similar with Stranger Things, that it existed independently of two movies, but it takes place in between the two of them with characters that are related to both. So it's like, if you never played the game, like it's fine. Uh-huh. Like you can watch the movies and you miss nothing. But if you have seen... Because didn't it come out like before the second movie? I was thinking it came out after before the second. So it was like, if you played it and then you went into the second movie, it's like, oh, I recognize, a couple of these people, they're from the game kind of thing. But with just additional context.
Like some additional knowledge.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool and well, but I feel like this iPhone game managed to be more well done than the full on big budget, Matrix game, which... surprising.
Matrix Path of Neo, is that the one?
No, I think it was,
I feel like that had to come out after the movies.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was titled or the game really being that good as much as it was just like
it wasn't
a marketing it was like a marketing blitz of the likes I had never seen before as far as like GameStop pre-ordering kind of stuff is concerned. So just quick shout out to Thimbleweed Park, which is a game that we've talked about quite a bit and we've reviewed on the site and everything else. Like it's available on basically everything. It's a point and click adventure game, made by Ron Gilbert. And it seems like the game like really found a home amongst people that, really like those kind of old school Maniac Mansion style, point and click adventure games. But kind of reimagined to be more modern, I guess, in a way. What I really, really, really like about Thimbleweed Park that I really wish more of these kind of like modern adventure games would do is that it has, I don't remember what they call it in the game, if it is easy mode or whatever else, but it's effectively like an easy mode where it plays almost like a Telltale game at its easiest setting. And that like you're just kind of experiencing the plot and like, making kind of basic decisions and stuff like that. Or you can play it in, I don't know. I think they call it like retro mode maybe, or I don't know, whatever, where you're actually doing the full point and click adventure experience where, you're like mashing items together and, solving the sometimes super obscure puzzles that are kind of ridiculous when you figure them out. It's like, how was I ever supposed to know how to do that kind of thing?
A little more old school inspired.
Yeah. So I thought it was really cool how they managed to provide, because the story of the game is really cool. It's kind of like a X-Files-y kind of Twin Peaks-y sort of thing, which is really neat. And it's cool that this is a game that you can recommend to a lot of people, because I feel like, for instance, the, what was it? Hector Badge of Justice or something like that. Those games were outstanding, and they came out, I don't know, a few years ago now, and they were made by like a real deal animation studio and all this stuff, so they were really cool. Mm-hmm. And they kind of had sort of like a Leisure Suit Larry kind of dirty humor kind of attached to them. But man, they were just brutally, stupidly, obtusely difficult.
Yeah.
like I remember like the first one getting stuck in the first room.
Mm-hmm.
And was just like, man, I remember why I don't like playing these games.
Right.
So that was kind of cool to have that experience. So you don't have that in Thimbleweed Park, I guess is my point. So Definitely worth a look. I don't care what platform you play on. It's probably, it's on Steam and Switch and I think other consoles as well.
Yeah, I think it's good on everything.
Let's see. What is the next thing we should talk about in this list? I guess we talk about Pocket Mine 3 real quick. I just wanted to throw this one in here because for whatever reason, it seemed like this game really kind of broke through the crusty barrier of people that hate free-to-play games. And you know exactly what I'm talking about, where it's like, people that are like, oh, I hate free-to-play. I never play anything free-to-play. Like
except for these seven games I play every
total
day.
Total garbage and all this stuff. And so Pocket Mine is basically like a, I don't know, kind of like a, if anyone remembers the old classic game, I Dig It.
Yeah.
Kind of like a Dig Dug sort of progress-based kind of tapper thing where you're just kind of digging down a mine. And it's like kind of impressive game design because the game like never gets you in a spot where it doesn't feel like there's another carrot on a stick for you to be chasing. Cause like, it's just an upgrading game basically. So you'd be like upgrading something and doing really good. And then I hit like another layer of rock that's harder for you to get through. And it's like, oh, my super upgraded stuff, like isn't as good anymore, but I just got this new thing and I need to upgrade that. So I don't know. I just thought it was worth a shout out because it was really funny seeing people that hate free to play games that were just all over trading their Pocket Mine 3 invite code to get free stuff in this game.
Yeah.
Which is always,
it is always enjoyable.
It's an amusing observation when that happens. Like, hey, you're the same guy that was just ruthlessly arguing front page comments about how free to play is the worst thing ever and
yeah.
all this stuff. Elder Scrolls Legends came out this year, which is kind of crazy to think that it's only been out a year with the amount of new content they've added to it and stuff like that. I don't know if this game is kind of the Hearthstone killer that they hoped it would be, because it seems to hit like a different audience and that it's a little bit, it reminds me more of Magic the Gathering than Hearthstone and that it kind of is way more complicated than Hearthstone and way less random. It seems like they built a game for people that enjoy games like Hearthstone, but are like, oh, this is too easy and I hate all the RNG stuff and all that stuff. So basically, if you're the kind of person that has said that about Hearthstone, you will really enjoy the Elder Scrolls Legends. And rapid firing out new content. The Pete Hines, who's their marketing vice president, I want to say. I don't know, something very high up in Bethesda is like, super high level competitive Magic player and really awesome guy to talk to about this game because it seems like so often when you, especially like the higher up you go in these companies and you deal with the marketing people, it's like you can tell that like the reason they're in that position is because they are just like a marketing expert, but they like really don't know that much about the game.
Right.
Beyond like, the best way to promote it and how to deal with like all the profits and loss of marketing and
this dude knows everything about the game itself, which is cool.
So it's super cool talking to this dude because it is like he can blow your mind with like actual marketing talk or like get on such a high level of talking about the strategy of this game that you're like, whoa, dude, you need to like dumb it down for me.
I think that's rad though. Like when somebody that's that high up, in a company that's big like Bethesda or whatever, is able to understand games and be that passionate about them personally that they are ensuring that the game that they release is up to their own standards because they're a fan themselves. So I think that makes such a difference.
Yeah, and because a lot of times it seems like when you hit the kind of executive level of a lot of these big companies, like they're businessmen happen to work in video games. And I don't know, I really appreciate how Bethesda kind of feels like it's the opposite in a way.
Yeah, I agree.
So Reigns for Majesty, we've talked about this before on the podcast, outstanding game. Consider this like your third or fourth or fifth reminder to download it if you haven't already.
Nothing wrong with that.
And Reigns is also very good. I was giving a buddy of mine that I saw over the weekend who was in town for Christmas a hard time about not downloading this game. He's like, it's $3. I was like, dude, Reigns is one of the few games that I will give people a money back guarantee for, and no one has taken me up on it yet.
Yeah.
Like anyone that I know in real life, like gives me pushback on it. I'm always like, dude, I will pay you $3 if you don't like this game. Like if you give it a fair shake and you don't like it, like I'll gladly give you your money back. And no one has taken me up on it yet. So I don't want to extend that to the whole internet because I feel like, people will be like, hey, I downloaded, I didn't like it. Where's my money?
Yeah. right.
kind of thing. So I broke out two family games, which I don't know, I kind of did this for search purposes. So if people are like searching for best family games, maybe these would come up. So Flower and Hidden Folks, two really good games if you're looking for stuff for like, I don't know, like kid friendly sort of no violence kind of exploration kind of stuff. Because in Flower, you basically play as the wind, which is pretty cool.
I liked that game a lot more than I thought I would. Because there's a lot of people that were like, oh, it's barely even a game or blah, 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 which I think is sort of true, but it's actually like a really fun, there is gaminess to it. And it's just like a neat experience.
Yeah.
I think Flower's really cool.
Yeah, Flower's neat. And $3 is pretty cheap for it. I feel like it was like, I don't remember what it launched for on PlayStation 4 when it launched, right? Or was it a PC game first? I don't remember. But definitely not $3. So, and then Hidden Folks is basically, just like a really cool modern indie spin on Where's Waldo, which is pretty cool. I was really surprised.
One of those games where you can sort of feel the love.
Yeah, I was beyond shocked to see like how popular this game was when it launched.
Yeah, me too.
Because like I remember we got on the test flight or early promo code or whatever, and I was like, oh, all right, this is a really cool Where's Waldo, and that was kind of where my first impressions ended, you know, because it's like we so often on mobile we see like very cool, well done games that just for like whatever reason just like don't have whatever, you know, unknown spark it takes to really, you know, reach like viral popularity or whatever you want to call it. But for whatever reason, maybe I don't know, maybe Adrian the developer like knew the right people or the right people are talking about on Twitter or whatever, but like Hidden Folks is one of the few indie mobile games this year that kind of like broke through the crust of having, you know, like the Kotakus and the Polygons of the world write about it in a serious sense, which
it's got the pedigree to be considered a real game.
I don't know. It was just unexpected, I guess, because if I could totally see an alternate universe where this game came out, we posted that it was cool and that was kind of the end of it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So no, I cannot predict why certain games get that amount of like weird traction and stuff.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about Injustice or Street Fighter or any of these fighting games? Is kind of more your department than my department.
I don't know. I liked Injustice 2 a lot until I didn't. But yeah. I think it's one of the most well-made free-to-play games out there. And it's definitely one you don't have to ever spend money on, which is cool. And it's got a big community and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a rad game. If you like Injustice on consoles and you just wanted something to like sort of occupy your interest with the series, but in an on-the-go sort of way. Like, it's not a fighting game replacement or anything like that, but it's a really nice companion for fans of the Injustice series. And so I got heavily sucked into it. I hit a point, which I think everyone will probably hit, where you just feel like the daily grind becomes too much, and then it starts to feel like a chore. Yeah. And I've had that pretty much with every free-to-play game I've ever gotten heavy into.
I think I remember you told the story on the podcast where you're like on your honeymoon or whatever, and like we're just desperately trying to like get your matches.
I'm not proud of that, but that did happen. But up until a point, like I don't know, I don't see any reason not to enjoy it. Or if you're one of those people that's like, I don't really care about clan stuff or being, you know, in leaderboards or being competitive. And I don't really care about collecting every single little version of every character ever. You know, I just kind of like to play it. Then you would have a great time with something like Injustice. That's why I wanted to have it.
Yeah. What I'm curious of with this game and the other kind of games that follow a similar sort of formula is that the reason that the graphics are so good in this game is because like they're using the actual assets from Injustice proper, like the console game, right? And I remember I asked, I don't remember if it was these guys or the Mortal Kombat guys or someone that makes one of these fighting games. Kind of an awkward question at GDC. They didn't have the answer to. Where I was like, all right, well, you know, the reason these games look so good on mobile is because you're borrowing console assets, but it's like clear that lifetime revenue of the mobile game has to vastly exceed the console game, right? So at what point does that relationship flip? And it's like, all right, well, we're making mobile game assets that I guess we'll throw together into a console game kind of thing.
Yeah.
And whoever asked I don't know.
That was the Mortal Kombat mobile before that came out, I think last year or the year before.
Oh, yeah.
They're showing us at GDC. But yeah, it's a super valid question. Like, hey, this mobile version is bringing in, you know, 100 times the revenue of the console game, but you know, the console games are clearly the focus and, you know, the real product.
Yeah, like, let me see if I can find
It's just interesting because you probably wouldn't have that same sort of engagement if you didn't have a console, you know, game audience. So I don't know. It's such a funny thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to log into my Sensor Tower stuff to see if they have revenue estimates for Injustice 2, just for the sake of.
I feel like it would depress me to know that.
So I don't know how accurate all this is or whatever, but so Sensor Tower is saying right now, $400,000 November 2017 revenue.
Just for November?
Just for November. You don't get, with the free account I have, you don't get access to all the historical stuff. But like, do you think that Injustice Proper on consoles made $400,000 in November?
It's tough to say. I doubt it, but you never know. I mean, leading up to holidays, it might have been a big deal. I bet, you know, a lot of consoles being sold and stuff like that. I don't know. I guess the difference is that every single player of Injustice on console spent $60 for it, or 80 or 100 depending on DLC stuff, or maybe 30 depending on sales stuff. So, but I mean, the point of being, every single player has paid something for it. Whereas Injustice Mobile, maybe 5% at best estimate could even be paying anything at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just different models. They're kind of hard to compare, but I do think it is interesting to be like, hey, which one do you need to pay more attention to, or which one gets the priority, you know, based on how much money one is bringing in over the other.
Right. Yeah.
It is kind of nuts. And then, like, the original Injustice is still getting updated on mobile, and it came out in 2013. The console game, I think, came out in, like, 2011 or 2012 or something. So it's like the console original Injustice is long and forgotten about. The mobile original Injustice is still around and has a huge player base and still gets updates, which pretty insane. Like, that's 4+ years later.
Lifetime value of that game has to vastly exceed the original Injustice. Like, there's no reality that exists where it's the opposite, I think.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts.
So another cool game off this list that I really wish more people downloaded. Like, I talked to developers, mentioned their sales numbers, and they were super low for how cool this game was Mushroom 11. Which, like, man, this game is neat. And I feel like they kind of made this game at an awkward time, because it was like, it came out on Steam first, because it had such a long development cycle that I think originally it was going to launch on touch devices first. But then it was kind of hit that weird point where it was like, oh, cool, no one is making money on premium games anymore on the App Store. So, like, let's redo as much as we can and, like, try to pitch it as a Steam game.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because like you basically played it on Steam as if you just use the mouse pointer instead of your finger, which it worked. It was fine. It was just like when you play this game on your iPad, it's so much cooler. So you play this kind of like green fungusy mushroom thing, I guess, hence the name Mushroom 11. And you are basically just like kind of like pushing it along. And it's this kind of like weird gelatinous thing that can like weasel into cracks and support itself to climb things and all sorts of other stuff. And what's so cool about it, and I love games like this that have like a really very, very, very simple kind of core gameplay mechanic that they then are able to just like expand into like boss fights and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is like so bizarre, because like I just imagine this game is like this game jam prototype thing, right? Where they figured out like how to build this physics model around this like green blob that you're able to push with your finger, and it kind of like supports itself and can weasel into holes and kind of do like light platforming because of that. Yeah. And being like, looking at that and be like, oh, that's cool. I don't know what you do with that, but that's neat. And then have them like figure out like, well, here's what we do with it. We do these complex physics puzzles and boss fights and like crazy platforming stunts and all this other stuff. And just truly outstanding game. And it's so much better on touch than it was on Steam. And I really think that it just got kind of lost its identity in a way when it went to Steam first.
Yeah.
Because it didn't seem to do very well on Steam, because when it launched on Steam, it was like kind of clear that it was supposed to be a touch game. So because it didn't seem to do too crazy on Steam, when it came to mobile, it didn't have that fanfare that happens a lot of the time where it's like, oh, it's this huge Steam game and it's finally out on the App Store. Like, this is so neat. Instead, it was just like, oh, cool, this is out.
Yeah.
You know, which, I don't know, I wish that wasn't the case because it's really, really, really neat games. And $5, no IAP shenanigans or anything else. So definitely give that a look. I don't know, you want to talk about like Datawing, I guess, another really cool one. We're just like randomly picking. Like we could discuss every single thing on this list and turn this into like a 2 month long episodic podcast.
That'd be kind of fun to actually do. But yeah, Datawing was Dan Vaught's game that he'd been working on for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Finally released it on mobile. It's sort of a top-down racing game, but the unique hook of it is that you actually graze the sides of the racetracks in order to boost. And so the game becomes not necessarily like riding, you know, not necessarily finding the first line around the track, you know, in the middle of the road. You're trying to sort of like ride the walls the best that you can in the best sort of line that gets you the most boost power to the finish line. And it's just such a unique, neat take on a racing game.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing is there's a whole storyline that goes along with this is actually pretty interesting, which you wouldn't expect from a game just by looking at it. And it's also totally free. There's no ads or IAP or anything like that.
There's no monetization at all in this game.
No, it's totally free.
Like it's
so,
a legit real deal free game.
Yeah. I always think that's kind of neat because it just shows that this is really, truly kind of a passion project sort of thing. And it's a game you can feel the love. So it's super cool. If you haven't played Datawing, download it. It's one of the most unique top-down racers I've played.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool how they, I don't know, I guess there's not that many people that are in a unique situation where they can work on a game for years that's outstanding and be like, here you go, it's free, just have fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
So it's kind of a pretty unique situation and a really cool game on top of that to have it all where like I love the mechanic, like, and the way the game kind of introduces it to you is really clever because it's one of those games that like kind of really eases you into the whole thing and almost kind of like makes you discover the mechanic on your own.
Yeah,
it's like the first few levels, like, you can just beat by kind of just racing and getting your little triangle dude to the finish line and that, and then you start losing. Yeah. And it's like, I don't understand why I can't go as fast as these guys. And then you kind of like see the AI racers doing this kind of like skid around the side thing.
Yeah.
And like, I think it's just, I don't know if it was intended to be as clever as it turned out to be. Because I really think it's cool when you play games and like during the tutorial, it's like gives you those epiphany kind of moments where you're like, oh, I see what I'm supposed to do. Yeah, this is so cool. So really neat. And another thing that I like about this is that it's level based, but levels have multiple objectives too.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just clear a level and progress through the game, like doing whatever like the easiest thing is, but it'll also give you like different kind of time benchmarks and stuff to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And man, those, I have spent a ton of time trying to unlock, like, especially when it's like, oh, I'm like 1/1000th of a second off of beating this, like, I'm sure I can do it better, and then like like six more attempts where you do worse than that, and then you finally get it and you're like, oh, this is the best thing ever, this game's great, I love it.
There's not a whole lot of better feeling than like peeling out on the walls in just perfect fashion and just boosting all the way through a track. I mean, it's rad.
I don't know, you probably got time for like one more if you want to. I don't know what you want to
see. I don't know. There's so many good games. This list is awesome.
Talking about HQ Trivia, there's some drama with that now.
That's all you. I don't play this game, but I know all about it.
Yeah, you should try it. It's really neat. So HQ Trivia, if you haven't played it or you've kind of written it off because it's, you know, like it's the popular thing that everyone's talking about and you hate popular things, it's worth trying because it's feels like an episode of Black Mirror on Netflix. The structure of the game is that I should know the schedule of this. So the only one that I know is the 8 p.m. one because I'm usually available to play that one. So you get a push alert. It's like, oh, HQ Live is starting. So you know, you pop in and it's a live streaming game show where you have like a live host and everything. He's like interacting with the audience and stuff. And it's 12 multiple choice questions. of just, you know, like random trivia stuff, and you win real cash at the end of it. Like if you if you make it to the 12th question with the correct answer, you get whatever the prize split is divided by the number of people still in the game at that point. And on Sundays, I think it is, they have their big game, which has a $10,000 prize. But so many people play that, you know, like your share of $10,000 is maybe like $100 or something like that. But still, like when's the last time you played a game on your phone that like you can spend 15 minutes playing through, you know, a trivia battle, and it's like, all right, what's your PayPal address? Here's your $122 of prize split, you know?
Right.
So it's pretty cool. There's actually drama right now and brewing in the various corners of the internet that are into HQ Live. Because I guess on Christmas afternoon, they did a show where, like, question number one or question number two, and it was a big prize show too, I believe. One of the very first questions was, like, what's the common plural of octopus? And one of the answers, so it, I don't remember what the answers were, but it was, like, octopuses, octopi, and then, like, I think the third answer, which is garbage.
And it could be either, right?
Well, that's the thing. So they asked, like, what's the common... I think the question specifically is like, what's the common plural of octopus?
You know?
So like something like 500,000 people said octopi and got knocked out on, you know, question number one or two or whatever. And since then it's just been like an all out revolt in this game because like that is the correct answer according to most people and stuff. But you know, they said it was octopuses or I don't remember what the correct answer was, but it wasn't the one that everyone thought. So, like the next game, people were just in the chat and like refusing to play.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. It's interesting. But what's crazy about HQ Live Trivia is that they have no monetization in the game right now. And, you know, reading like Business Insider articles and stuff about it is that like, oh, they're doing the whole, oh, we're trying to grow a quality product in our user base and all this stuff. And then we're going to worry about monetizing it. And, I feel like someone can come along and do this game so much better.
Really?
That if they don't start like making money out of it, like it's just gonna vanish. Like someone's gonna take the idea and do it better.
Yeah.
Cause like imagine if it was like, I don't know, like whatever, like live trivia with celebrities or something like that, where you win like actual like good prizes and not necessarily like, you know, $100 split amongst 25 people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you're gonna hit a point eventually where it's just like, oh, this is boring. Like I don't care. But if you got an alert and it's like, hey, the 8 o'clock show is starting right now. It's hosted by Conan O'Brien. You'd be like, oh, shit, I got to check this out. This is cool. Or like hosted by Conan O'Brien, you know, grand prize winner gets a Honda Civic or something like that. Like that could be pretty neat because like really you don't have to be limited to the 12 questions, right? They could keep going until there's just one winner. And it would be really cool to think like you could be playing from your couch on a live trivia show hosted by a celebrity and make it all the way to the end and win a car or something like that. Like, you know, the formula has so much more cool stuff that it can do that I think the HQ Live kind of like dragging their feet doing this like weird like startup mode that they're doing is someone's just going to pass them by with something way cooler.
Yeah. You
know? So I don't know. We'll see. So yeah, that's about an hour's worth of talking about all these games.
Could keep going, man.
Could keep going forever. So if you haven't yet, definitely check out our list of the top 100 games of the year. I think you can just find it by just typing Touch Arcade Best iPhone Games 2017 into Google. It's still on the front page right now as of this recording. We'll link it in the podcast notes and all this stuff. But really high quality stuff that came out this year. And like, what was wild too, I was thinking about, like we could have had another list of 100 games of games that have come out in the past that are still being maintained and stuff. You know, it's like a game as a service kind of.
Somebody made a war. It was Polygon or The Verge or somebody made an award called like Best Ongoing Game of 2017, and it was No Man's Sky. And I was like, damn, that's a great idea for mobile.
Yeah,
I feel like Hearthstone would win every year, but it's still a good idea to at least acknowledge that games kind of live on past their release date.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I think we'll have to do something like that. So I guess the plan for the rest of the week is we're going to slowly drizzle out like our personal top 10 list and then do the game of the year stuff on Friday will be the 29th.
So yeah.
Stay tuned for that. And we'll record another podcast. So probably talking about our game of the year selections and things like that. So stick with us. It'll be really cool. So thanks a ton for listening to this week's episode of the Touch Arcade Show. As we mentioned at the start of the show, we are 100% supported by Patreon and other community methods of supporting us. So if you like this podcast enough to listen to it all the way through, we'd really appreciate it if you would at least check out our Patreon at patreon.com/TouchArcade. You get a video version of the podcast if you support us. Also, it'd be really awesome if you could do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. We also have a Twitch at twitch.tv/TouchArcade, Discord at discord.gg/TouchArcade, and always appreciate iTunes reviews for the show. So with that out of the way, we'll catch you, I guess, this week on another episode of the Touch Arcade Show. So see you then.